Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
How's it going, everyone? My name is Dave. I want to welcome you to another Think Orange podcast, coming to you live from the Think Orange bunker. And right next to me is my good friend,
Ashley. I'm here.
You're back.
I am.
It's so good to have you back.
Thank you so much.
You know, I'm not going to lie to you. I was thinking about replacing you with Kevin's dad because he brings so much more exuberance and so much more excitement than you do. I heard that.
It's a good thing he's joining us today.
Yes.
So he can be the one that brings the energy.
Well, how are you today, Kevin's dad?
I'm fine.
It's so good. There's so much energy here. Hey, we have a very special episode today. Ash, we are pumped about this one, right? This is going to be one of those ones. We say this all the time. This is going to be one of those ones where you're going to want to take notes. You're going to want to share it with your friends because we have a very special guest. And Ash, I want you to introduce them.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to interview Louis Giglio, which I'm guessing you probably have heard that name before, maybe?
I've heard of it.
Listen, I have been looking forward to that interview because I just wanted to hear what he had to share. But if you have not heard of Louis, maybe you've heard of the Passion Conferences, which is a conference for 18 to 25-year-olds here in Atlanta. And him and his wife, Shelly, also lead the teams at Passion City Church, Six Step Records, and the Passion Global Institute.
Yeah, they're really known. That Passion is known for its music, like specifically, right?
It's good stuff.
I mean, as along with also the way that they lead and pastor millennials and, and Gen Xers and things like that. But they do a fantastic job with all of their worship. You've probably heard a ton of their songs, even if you haven't heard of Louis. But if you haven't heard of Louis, you should, because he's also an author. He's written a whole bunch of books.
Yep.
He's got a kid's book out called Indescribable. I passed that on to my daughter yesterday. She was like beside herself excited with it.
I put it on the top of my book stack to read myself. So.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. It's 100 devotions for kids. And Ashley's got it on the top of her bookshelf.
Listen.
Which probably tells you a little bit about Ashley more than anything else.
That was a compliment, right?
Yeah, it was a compliment. Okay. He also wrote a book called Goliath Must Fall. And that's what we had the opportunity to talk to him about. The idea of it being that we all face giants in our life. And Ash, you know, in the lead up to Easter, there's a lot of giants that people in ministry face, right?
There are. There's a lot of expectations around that time on ministry leaders.
Yeah, it becomes like the church Super Bowl.
It
so
is.
So Louis had a chance to talk about that, and he talked specifically about giants of approval and giants of comfort. And I just know you are going to get so much out of this special episode. And Louis is also going to be speaking at the Orange Conference. Is that right?
Yes, I'm so excited.
Yeah, he's going to see you in the hallways now, and he's going to give you a high five, I reckon, because now he knows you so well.
Right.
And here's the special treat. And this is, if you only listen to this whole episode for one reason, this is the reason. We actually got him to sing.
We did. And he didn't just sing like one line of a song.
No.
He committed to like two full lines.
And we almost had to pull him back a little bit and just, dude, just, you know, end it, because we can't have this whole thing being
well,
a,
like
a
our
singing
response
podcast.
Was laughter.
Well, like, your response was laughter. I don't think anybody listening is ever going to believe that your response was laughter.
I wonder if I hadn't laughed, if he would have kept going.
And I remember when he started singing, I looked across at you and your face lit up. Like your eyes were huge.
Well, because I don't like to always be the only one singing on this pod.
So make sure you keep listening to the end just to hear Louis Giglio sing, because it's well worth it. But I also just wanted to mention, because he is speaking at the Orange Conference, did you know, Ash, that the Orange Conference is actually the sponsor of this episode?
You know, I was expecting that, because it's coming very quickly.
It sure is. And if you don't know, the Orange Conference is a three-day conference in Atlanta, Georgia, for your entire family ministry team. You can discover how we can work together to do more for the next generation as we explore this year's theme of
One Voice.
One Voice. Did that sound like I was reading any of that?
No, you know it by heart, Dave.
You know what we should do? We should get Kevin's dad to read this at some point. That would be absolutely, because of the passion and the exuberance. Would you be up for doing something like that, Kevin's dad?
No.
Okay. I guess we'll keep doing it, man. I guess we'll keep doing it, right? Hey, and also, Louis gave us a couple of books to give away, which we're going to do a competition at the end of this episode. So make sure you stick around for that as well. And he also is going to be giving us access to a very special free resource that he has available, which you can find out during our outro as well. So make sure you stick around for the whole thing. It's going to be fun, right?
It is. I mean, that interview, I'm going to go back and listen to a lot because he said some really profound things.
Yeah, I was exactly the same. When we finished the interview, I went home to my wife and I said, like, I'm going to listen to this one with a notebook out.
Yep.
Because there were so many profound things. He talked about social media. He talked about dealing with anxiety. He talked about having victory and freedom in all that we do. It was pretty incredible.
I think what I loved the most about it is you believed everything he said because you believed he believed everything he said.
Yeah.
And he was like so authentic about it.
He was raw.
He was raw.
I felt like he was raw. He was real. He was super genuine as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you're going to absolutely love this. So here it is, our interview with Louis Giglio. Well, we are here with Louis Giglio. Louis, thank you so much for your time. It's so great to meet you finally.
Well, it's great to be with you guys. I'm excited about today.
We are super pumped to be in this amazing office. It's all made out of glass. The whole thing looks like mirrors or something. tell us, for people who are listening who maybe don't know a huge amount about you or haven't Googled you recently, tell us a thumbnail, how long you've been in ministry and how that all started.
Yeah, I've been in ministry forever. Andy and I are both going to be 60 years old this year. That's Andy Stanley. He's pastor of a church here in Atlanta.
Never heard of it.
So we've been around a while. We've been doing ministry a while. And I've been a pastor of Passion City Church for 9 years.
Yep.
We've been doing Passion Conferences for 18 to 25-year-olds, college-age people, for 21 years now.
Wow.
And 9 years ago, out of that movement, the DNA, the ethos, if you will, of the Conference of Passion, we planted Passion City Church.
Yep.
And we're excited. We're opening a new location in Washington, D.C. on Easter Sunday.
Wow.
So that's cool for us.
Yeah.
And we're excited. So this office, you mentioned the glass, cool story here. I mean, just unbelievable how we're in this place. It's an old Home Depot Expo Design Center.
Wow.
Nice.
That went out of business. And then it was a PGA Superstore that went out of business. So we've had all manner of, you could get a toilet or get your kitchen remodeled or get a set of golf clubs in this building.
That's awesome.
And now people are meeting Jesus, so it's pretty great.
So good. Hey, Louis, do you remember what your first job in ministry was?
My first job was twofold. One, I was the associate to the youth pastor or youth minister because she was a woman and she couldn't be a pastor.
You're right over there.
I just have a few thoughts on that. We'll keep going. Yeah.
So she was the youth minister, Mary Gillerstedt. She's still alive and still works at First Baptist Church Atlanta.
Wow.
She's about 90 years old, and
that's
she's
amazing.
Got a lot of get up and go. She was Andy and I's youth minister growing up.
That's cool.
And when I was in college at Georgia State, I was her assistant for a season of time. And probably the other sort of same parallel track, I was the adjunct youth pastor, if you will, at Oakwood Baptist Church, which may not even be called that anymore, just south of Gainesville. Up 985, and I would go up there on Tuesday nights, and I would lead the youth ministry for about 15 kids up there every Tuesday night.
Mm.
And those were my two first, that's a job. Like, I got to show up and do that. I don't think I got paid for either of those things, but those were my first two jobs in ministry.
That's awesome. Now, you're also a well-known author now. You recently wrote a book, Goliath Must Fall, which came out last year in May, right?
Yeah.
Yep. That's a great one. As we approach Easter, this is a really good concept. For some people who are working in ministry, there's a whole bunch of Goliaths that they face, right? I'm sure you've faced a couple. What are some of the Goliaths you face when it comes to ministry?
Well, I think we face, you know, Goliaths in all areas of life, but we lifted up five giants in this book because we found five giants in the story. So we weren't just trying to take our giants and cram them into a Bible story. We let the Bible story sort of introduce us to the giants. Number one giant, fear. Why was the army of Israel on the hillside? Because the text says they saw him, Goliath, and they heard him, and they were terrified.
Yeah.
Right.
So we know fear is a real giant. Anger is a giant in that story. Rejection. David was rejected by his brothers, by Saul, by everybody in that story, basically. we know that comfort is a big giant in that story. Mm-hmm. David was bringing a resupply
of
bread and cheese to the brothers. They had tents, they had fires, they had pots, they had pans, and they had little brothers coming and resupplying them. Why would they want to risk it?
Yeah.
To go into the valley. And I think comfort's a sneaky sleeper giant in most everyone's life.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me personally, I think it, when we planted the church, I became a pastor of a local church. It all of a sudden, I was in a whole new world. And the two giants that were my biggest giants, and I talk about this a lot, were wanting to be liked by people.
Mm.
So that giant of approval, wanting everybody to think I was great. And control, you know, wanting to manage everything, to somehow control the outcome of all decisions, to think that if I worked hard enough, I could, you know, sort of run everything. And not on the negative side of control, but just that I think I see what could be helpful for people and I want to help us get there. But control is a real problem because none of us are in charge of very much.
Right.
Mm. I'm in charge of my decisions and my attitude.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
I'm not in charge of the affairs of the world, circumstances, decisions other people make, and other people's attitudes. I'm not in charge of those. But I'd like to be.
Right.
And I think all of us would be.
You have some good thoughts about it.
And I think I see some. And, you know, so you take that for a parent. A parent wants to control the outcome of their kids' lives, decisions, attitudes, but they can't. No parent can control all of that.
Yeah.
And so at some point, control will take you down.
Yeah.
It's what keeps you up at night, and it's what keeps us staring at the ceiling at night because we're trying to work out the affairs of not the whole world necessarily, but of all the people around us and circumstances. And if you're a local church pastor and you have a control issue, you're on a collision course for failure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, I would love to, as a 3 on the Enneagram, as a networker on the right path, and as a yellow on the color test, I would love for you to tell me how I can overcome my approval giant.
Well, you got to dig a shallow grave and get in it. You know,
I'm pretty sure you just, you know, self-awareness. You're one step.
It's true.
Step towards that.
I think that it's a fine line how you slice that, but the way I would. The way I'm working through it is to try to navigate life from a place of approval and not for a place of approval.
Yeah,
I spoke to our Olympic athletes before they went to Rio last year on the swimming team here in Atlanta. They were training here for a few weeks. And I said, the last thing I said to them was, when you get on that block and you're looking down waiting to hear that beep that means go.
Right.
I want you to visualize seeing on that block the word approved.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So that you know that on the block, you're loved by God.
Yeah.
On the block, He came for you. On the block, He valued you. He chose you. He created you. Everything about you speaks of your worth to Him. And so I want you to look down and see that on the block so that when the horn goes off, that approval isn't at the other end of the pool, but approval is where you started from. And so you're swimming from approval and not for approval. Now, you still want to win. You know, I think my last line was, and I don't know if I can say this one, it was swim your butt off.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you train for that. You work for that. You're skilled and gifted for that. You have the aptitude for that. And a lot of people have invested in that. So swim your butt off.
Yeah.
Swim your tail off.
Yeah.
So you're swimming to win.
Yeah.
But you're not swimming for approval.
That's really good. And I think as we're, like, this podcast is going to come out just before Easter, I would imagine that people listening to this right now who are in ministry, they're on the starting blocks about to swim across the pool for probably our, you know, the church version of the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Your message to them would be the same, right? Visualize the word approved as they start heading into Good Friday and Easter Saturday, Easter Sunday services.
Yeah, well, I think it's walking into the office, sitting down with a conversation, going into Good Friday for sure. We all are approval sponges.
Mm.
And we are set up in a situation right now, culturally, especially with social media, for failure.
Yeah.
So we've got to really work hard. You know, it used to be, I'm old enough to remember the day that if you went out and worked out, which maybe you did or maybe you didn't, the only people who knew you worked out was you.
Yeah.
Or the people in the
or
gym.
The other person. Well, there were no gyms back then. Yeah. So it was you or someone who saw you running at the baseball field or the park or the track or whatever. That was the story of the workout.
Yeah.
It wasn't me, you know, telling the world I worked out today and I feel good about it. So I'm going to, you know, post a photo. Mm-hmm. You didn't get any other approval for working out except for the fact that you worked out.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we live in this on a stage. All of us are in a reality show every day.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that in this reality show that we live in, we are always looking to the audience to go, did you like that? So people post not what they like. People post what other people like.
Right.
Whew. Dang. Dude, I'm going to post that.
I don't post what
you're talking to Dave, who's like
social
media.
I don't post what I like all the time.
Yeah. You post what other people like.
I post what I think other people will like.
Man.
Because the win is how many likes did the post get.
Yeah.
Not did I actually like the post.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you get to that threshold of I just am trying to post what I like and hopefully other people will like it, but it was good enough for me that I liked it. And I think that this new climate fights against the idea that we start with a relationship with God and we start with a value system that he has spoken into.
Mm.
And we're basically just shoving it back in his face every day with the way that we are living our lives out loud in front of people right now, because we're saying, thank you for giving your life for me. Thank you for dying for me. Thank you for knitting me together in my mother's womb.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling me to some destiny. So I think we're sitting around this table today in the calling that God put on our lives.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
We didn't all choose this. We didn't, you know, organize getting around this table and doing this podcast today. God put us on this path.
Yeah.
He chose us, I believe, in our mother's womb to be who we are and to be about what we're about today. Mm. And when we're struggling out in the world to say, well, do you guys like me? Is everybody okay with me? Does everybody feel good about me? What is that saying to him every single day? And so it's trying to keep that relationship fresh for me, walking into rooms and going, and here's how it breaks down for somebody that's listening to us today. I was talking to a friend yesterday planting a church. Boy, that was a great conversation. You don't want to talk to me about planting a church. I'm only 9 years in. And I had pastor like Andy Stanley when I made the decision to plant this church. So our conversation over lunch went like this. Andy, there's something I want to tell you. I haven't told anyone but Shelley. I want you to be the first to know you're my pastor, you're my friend, and I know this is going to sound kind of crazy, but I really am convinced God wants us to plant a church. I was 50 years old, and Andy and I were sitting having lunch near North Point Mall, and he looked at me. He did not see that coming, I don't think, and there was a long, long pause, and he said three words, "Are you sure?"
Wow.
And I said, in my mind, I was like, wow, thank you for that. That's wow, man, I'm going to always remember that, you know? Yeah. And I thought, and I said, well, that's probably a really good question, but yes, because I was sure God had made this so clear.
Yeah.
He used an overabundance of clarity.
Yeah.
In calling Shelley particularly into this story and me. And at this stage of life, you got to, you know, I wasn't just like, I think we might plant a church, you know?
Yeah.
And then the next line he said was, man, it's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done.
Mm.
I was like, wow, what an encouraging direction this is going in. So I sat with a friend yesterday planting a church and I said, are you sure?
Mm. Mm.
Because you learn guys like Andy are pretty smart.
Yeah.
You know, you end up quoting him at the end of the day. And then I said to this friend of mine, what did I say next?
It's going to be the hardest thing.
It's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done. And he just came out of something really hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's going to be hard as that. And he was like, nothing's going to be hard as that. I said, you don't believe me, do you? He goes, nope. And I said, I didn't believe Andy.
Yeah.
But it's true. You know, life is hard. And planning church is hard. And so I said to him, coming to the point, I said, so a lot of decisions you're going to have to make. You're not going to make the decision you want to make and the decision you know you need to make because you are going to be concerned about people's approval.
Mm.
Right.
But at the end of the day, here's the thing. You end up having that conversation at some point anyway. 5 minutes later, 5 weeks later, 5 months later, or 5 years later, you're still going to have that conversation, and they're still going to walk away possibly.
Yeah.
So you got to come from acceptance, know who you are, be confident in that. And I think that gives you the freedom and the liberty to lead with courage and with clarity.
Yeah.
So I would imagine the listeners are maybe processing through that, because on the other side of this tension is, you know, other people's approval is the other side of like a promotion or a raise or an opportunity or, you know, and so I would imagine you haven't maybe always thought this way. So what was your process to get to that place?
Well, you know, just to speak into your thought process, because I think it's really helpful. I think when you're wanting to be the best at what you do, that's different than wanting everybody to like you. Those are two different things.
Yep.
And I think coming into an environment and saying, does everybody think I'm okay? Does everybody think I'm good enough?
Mm-hmm.
Does everybody like me? That's different than I have a gift and a talent and an opportunity from God. I've got a sack of gold, to put it in Jesus terms. And maybe you got two sacks and you got five and I got one, but we all got a sack of gold. A talent is what that is. That's not a coin. That's a weight measure. And it is equivalent to a bag of gold. So we all got something. So when I come into my job, I want to maximize my ability, my opportunity, my gift, my aptitude. I want to maximize all that, and I want to get recognized for it ultimately. But I want you to recognize the quality of my work, and then I want you to like the fact that I'm a person who is kind and patient and trustworthy and faithful and gentle and all those other fruits of the Spirit. That's what I want you to like. I like that guy. I like that girl because she's kind. She's true to her word. She is dependable. And I like her work because her work is excellent. And so we want people to approve of our work because we want it to be excellent, but not so that then we can go home and go, oh, I'm a somebody now because I got that promotion. Because then what happens when there are no more promotions? What happens when you're the president of the United States and there isn't a bigger desk to sit behind? Then what do you do at night? You go like, well, I guess I got to feel good about myself now because I'm in this chair. And so there has to be a point where you feel good about you, and that's not connected to the performance in a given situation. And I'm still on that journey because I think we all are. That's wired into us, our sinful nature. And I think we're always going to be in that battle.
Now there is hope. There's a light at the end of this tunnel, right?
I like how you're turning this.
Because
towards
Goliath
Easter.
Must fall. And this is what I love. There's a part in the book where you're talking about the emphasis of the word must. Give people who are listening to this who are listening saying, yes, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. I am dealing with approval, with comfort, with all those fears, all those Goliaths. Talk about how Goliath must fall.
Yeah, well, there are three curveballs in this book.
We don't have to give them all away because we want people to buy the book as well.
But one of the less popular ideas in life is that it's not all about you. Rick Warren got that on a Starbucks cup. That's amazing and miraculous. That quote, there was a season where Starbucks was putting famous people's quotes on cups. This was 15 years ago.
I remember that.
And there was a Rick Warren, he's a pastor, quote from his book, it's not about you, Pastor Rick Warren. Now, that's a paradoxical quote to put on a Starbucks cup for someone who just said, I want a soy latte, double espresso, half shot of sugar-free vanilla, I want 104 degrees.
Light ice.
And light ice, but can you let it sit for 30 seconds before you pour it on the ice?
You can do that. That's an incredible
one. And then you look at the cup and it's not about me.
That's so good.
But that's not a big seller.
Yeah.
But it is a life-giving, life-freeing statement.
Yeah.
And the reason is simple. If you're the best person that's ever lived and the best thing going on planet Earth, then make it all about you.
Yeah.
But if you're not the best person who's ever lived and the greatest thing in all the world, then if you make it about you, you just made it about something that's less than the best.
Yeah.
And God wants us to have the best.
Yeah.
So when he says it's not about you, he's not trying to poke us in the eye. He's just trying to say, I want to give you the best.
Right.
And you're not the best.
Yeah.
I'm the best.
Yeah.
So it's all about me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would like to give you the very best. So here's the key in this Goliath must fall thing. The reason why we say Goliath must fall, and not, as my friend said, Goliath has already fallen. Louis, we all know the story. We've all read the deal. So yeah. The title is Goliath has fallen.
Yeah.
Come on, let's rise up into that. I said, well, A, he hasn't fallen in our lives and our real true experiences. Mm. He did fall in 1 Samuel 17 in the Valley of Elah, but I'm still struggling with some things.
Yeah.
And the reason they must fall is because God wants me to live free.
Yeah.
But secondly, because God doesn't get glory when I've got a giant with its foot on my throat.
Mm.
And so if our motivation, and I think this is very, very powerful, is simply for our freedom, you should read this book because you've got a giant of addiction in your life. And you should get free from that. You should read this book because you are struggling with rejection and you need to get free from that. You should read this book because blah, blah, blah. I don't think we're going to get free. I don't think anybody truly gets free until they understand there's two things going on, my freedom and God's glory. Because when I get free, guess what? God gets glory. Why? Because he just got put on display as being bigger than whatever has been suffocating me. So when I'm living in fear and anxiety, which I have a very open and public, you know, story of, I'm down in a pit of depression. I'm 4 months out of commission. Don't leave the house. Don't go to meetings. Don't walk in the cul-de-sac with my wife.
Mm.
Thinking I'm crazy and losing my mind and will never be back in the black. I wouldn't, if you told me in 2009 that I was going to be sitting around this table with you today doing this podcast, I would have, honest to God, honestly, this is not drama. I would have just looked at you and said, thank you for your positivity.
Yeah.
I appreciate all that. I could imagine going on a pogo stick from here to Neptune more than I could imagine that in 2018, I'm going to be on a podcast in my right mind talking to people. That's how far down I was. And so I know these giants are real and they can kill you. And I wanted freedom, but part of freedom is God getting glory.
Yeah.
And let me show you how it works real fast. So we've been through alcoholism in our family. We've been through a lot of struggles, death, disease. And when these things come, like an alcoholism, if there's any addiction in a family of anybody listening to us today, I'm pretty likely that addiction is on the throne right now. It gets all the attention, all the praise. In other words, think about how many conversations are about, well, this happened today. Well, the such and such. Well, the recovery. Well, we went to the counselor. Well, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. My brother, he's an alcoholic. My dad, he's an alcoholic. My mom, she's an alcoholic. Well, the reason why is because, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And what we're doing is we're putting alcoholism on the pedestal, and alcoholism is getting all the glory.
Yeah.
Right.
And alcoholism is real, so you can't say, oh, it's not real, let's ignore it. You just have to lift your eyes up higher and say, man, we're struggling with alcoholism in our family right now, so we have locked our gaze on Jesus right now. We have got to keep our eyes on him and get praise in our mouth so that he's getting the praise, and as we're dealing with alcoholism, we're keeping the perspective right. It's like the London Eye, right? You get in on ground level, and in just a few minutes, you're 431 feet above the Thames River looking down at Parliament, not up at Parliament. I just was looking up at Big Ben. Now I'm looking down on Big Ben. Mm. And that's what worship does. It gets us up above these giants so that we see God's perspective. And at the end of the day, I would encourage anybody with a giant, anxiety like mine, depression, worry, dread, fear, whatever they all are, God, I want to get free, but I want you to get glory.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's why anxiety must fall.
Yeah, that's so good. Oh my gosh. At the start of the book, you tell this story about you and Andy hunting for snakes. I want to put that on hold because I actually want to unpack that a little bit further. But the point of that is you say that some of our Goliaths, some of our giants are dead, but they're still deadly. Can you unpack
that?
Yeah,
you walk on a trail and you come across a rattlesnake that died 90 days ago. It hasn't been disturbed by another animal. It's a skeletal form. You know it's dead because it's a skeleton, but it's intact. Mm. You pick it up, you open its fangs, and you stick your hand in there. There's venom in a dead rattlesnake's fang, spring-loaded.
Mm.
And if you puncture your hand on the fang of that snake, you will seek medical attention. Hmm. You will get to the hospital eventually. Your hand will swell up the size of a volleyball. You will get the anti-venom, and you'll live to tell about how idiotic it was the day that you stuck your hand in the rattlesnake's mouth that was dead and punctured your hand on its fang.
Yeah.
And our giant is dead. Jesus finished the work.
Mm.
But he's still deadly. He's still got poison spring-loaded in his dead mouth.
Mm.
And if we puncture ourselves on his fangs, we get poison in our system.
Mm.
And this is the paradox of living in two kingdoms that are overlapping right now. And it's the reality that if you choose to listen to the enemy, he will poison you and has the power and the potential to kill you.
Mm.
But that's not an option that you have to take because that giant is dead. And so when I think about my anxiety, just coming back to me, let's talk about me because I feel more comfortable getting real around me. My anxiety was a crushing hit in 2009.
Mm.
So I didn't have a panic attack. I ended up in the hospital multiple times. And it hit my system hard. I think hard enough that now here we are 9 years later, I still deal with it.
Yeah.
Not in a crippling way.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't missed work or stayed home for a day in years and years and years and years. I'm not at that level, but it's still around.
Mm. Right.
But when it comes, this is going to sound like a preacher cliche, and I'm not trying to minimize anybody's giant down to that.
Yeah.
But I think about it like there's an anxiousness welling up. I'm walking up on a crime scene.
Mm. Mm.
That's what I think about. There's a body outline on the ground right now where anxiety died.
Mm. Mm.
And I'm walking up on a crime scene right now. Alcoholism is a crime scene.
Yeah.
It's real, but it's a crime scene. Rejection is a crime scene.
Mm.
Jesus took these giants down.
Yeah.
And so that's a mental shift. Instead of looking up at this thing tormenting me, I'm kind of looking at this outline going, anxiety died. And it's dead. And Satan, you're dead.
Yeah.
You're still talking to me right now. I hear you talking to me, but I'm going to need to probably just turn my attention over here and start letting my shepherd talk to me because he leads me through the valley of the shadow of death. And I don't fear any evil because he's with me.
Yeah.
And his rod and his staff, they comfort me. And I need some comfort right now. So I'm going to turn to my shepherd and let him lead me through whatever it is. And for me, it's as simple as saying what's making me anxious, and it always is clear what's making me anxious.
Yeah.
And then trying to give what's making me anxious to Jesus, put it in his hands and trust him with it.
That's good. So it's about reminding ourselves that that giant is dead, right?
I think it's about understanding that there is a finished work of Jesus.
Yeah.
So he's taking the sting out of death and sin and the enemy. And the enemy's power is in his ability to deceive us.
Yeah.
And deception is rooted in lies. And so our choices every day are about lies, are about truth. And Jesus knew this when he said, I've got the truth, and the truth will set you free.
Yeah.
So I think it's a decision that we make day by day. I use the illustration in this message around this idea of an old cassette tape player.
Yeah.
And we had one of our guys here who does a lot of voice work do this very creepy, you're not going to make it. Whatever can go wrong is going to go wrong.
Mm.
No one cares about you.
Mm.
Everyone has forgotten you. Why would God ever even think about you? You, da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's like a 5-minute take. And I have the old school cassette player and it's mic'd up on the thing and I play a little bit of it. Anybody know that voice? And people are like, yeah, I know that voice. That's the one keeping me up at night. I stop, come back to it. Eventually, I don't just say you can stop it. I say you can eject it. And I pull the tape out because it needs to be visible. And and I just start pulling the tape out of the old cassette shell. And I say, you have control of the playlist.
Yeah.
So good.
I have control of the playlist. The enemy does not have control of my playlist unless I give him control of my playlist.
I love that.
And so I've got I'm the DJ in my story.
Mm.
And I can put on the soundtrack that I want to put on, or I can let him put on the soundtrack. And his is always going to be, everyone's against you. It's never going to work out. Don't even get your hopes up. If people really knew, blah, 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 all of the things he's just sowing into us, where I've got over here this opportunity to worship God. And for me and my story, won't get into all of it, but the thing that began to make the change for me out of that hole and back into life again was worship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And worship is a powerful weapon. We talk about this in the book. It's not just the thing we do on the noonday sun. It actually is the most powerful thing we can do in the darkest night.
Mm, that's good. When you said a couple of minutes ago, you were saying there's a crime scene here, but you're turning your attention towards your shepherd. The thought that I had straight away was Joshua 1, right? Mm. When God says to Joshua, Joshua, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, it's not like Joshua didn't know that. He'd been mentored by Moses for decades, right? But he says, Joshua, my servant, is dead. And now this, and he goes in and tells Joshua, that's what I thought of straight away, because he's like, hey, it's dead. So now turn away. And now I've got this plan for you. And I know for you, part of that was this, you talked about your shepherd, Psalm 23. You read that for like 40 days straight.
Yeah.
What did that do?
Well, I think it changes the playlist.
Yeah.
It changes the narrative. And that's what we're trying to do and help people do. I ran into someone just a few days ago. They said, I'm 23 days into 40 days of Psalm 23.
Mm.
And it's amazing how it's changing my focus. I think what we see, the psalmist David also said, I have set the Lord continually before me because he is at my right hand. I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad. My mouth rejoices, my tongue rejoices, and my flesh rests secure. So the three byproducts of getting God in view, not the giant, but getting God in view are my heart is glad. So that's about our emotional well-being. My tongue is now got praise in it and not dread and doom. And I can lay down at night.
Yeah.
And I can be secure. You know, that rod in Psalm 23 doesn't get talked about very much. But every shepherd had a crook. Come on, little lambs, let's go this way. But every shepherd had a rod. The rod wasn't for the lambs. It was for the bear and the cougar and the puma and the lion. And when David says to King Saul, hey, I can do this because I've killed a lion and killed a bear. What he says about him is, I ran and I struck it with that rod.
Yeah.
Beat it, beat the daylights out of it with that rod. That rod was hewn out of the trunk of a tree. It was the hardest part of the wood in a tree, the densest part. Mm-hmm. And he knew how to wield that for survival in life.
Yeah.
But even then, David said at the very end, the same God who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear will deliver me from this Philistine.
Yeah.
So his hope wasn't in the rod, it was in the power of God. But I just need to visualize sometimes that Jesus isn't meek and mild and, hey, I'm kind and gentle, but he's got a rod in his hand.
Amen.
And he intends to protect me as one of his sheep.
I think what I love the most about what you just shared is recognizing the enemy's voice, you know, because even though he's a liar, he's really loud.
Yeah.
And like slaying a giant isn't necessarily about you taking out the enemy as much as it's changing where your focus is, changing what voices you're listening to. And I think that, I mean, it just brings God so much glory just in that statement alone.
Yeah, I agree. It's awesome. Yeah. Hey, I wanted to ask, because you've done this 40 days of Psalm 23, have you ever been to Israel and seen the green pastures? Because I've got a photo that I carry with me. And the thing that I was struck by, you know, I've been to Israel a couple of times. The thing that struck me was I had a picture of a green pasture being knee-high alfalfa grass as far as the eye can see. But if that's me and I'm the sheep and I'm in that, I didn't need a shepherd. Whereas there, you know, it's a desert and there's tufts of grass and the shepherd's job is to lead each sheep to the next mouthful of grass. And he only gives you a mouthful, just what you need for that moment. I'm wondering if you'd been there and experienced that as well.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of Israel and most recently was there and went to the Valley of Elah because that's not on the tourist trail.
No.
And it's a farmer's field. There's nothing to see there except the farmer's field and some hillsides. Yeah, but I wanted to go there. I wanted to stand in the middle of the Valley of Allah. I wanted to yell with my natural voice up against the hillside and to hear if my voice would reverberate all the way down the valley. I wanted to know, is it true that Goliath could stand there 40 days and 40 nights and every one of those men of Israel could hear him? And so, hey, I would just yelled up that hill and it just, man, your voice just carries up and down the hillside. And I thought, it happened.
Yeah.
Right here, it happened. And the little brook is still there. There's not water running in it, but the brook is there. All the smooth stones are still
you,
there.
You picked up stones, right?
Everyone does.
Of course they do. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question, maybe a little bit on the topic, but a little bit off topic as well. You've talked a lot about playlists. I want to know what's on your playlist. I'm not talking about the metaphorical sense. What if we switched on your iPod, your phone right now, what would be on it? What would we find?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. We make a lot of music here at Passion, so we listen to a lot of music all the time that we are in the process of making.
Yeah.
But if you listen to my playlist right now, I'll tell you past. I won't tell you today's playlist. Because if you listen past, there's a song by Elevation Worship called Do It Again.
Yeah.
It's exactly what you're talking about. Joshua crossed over the Jordan River. The first city was Jericho, 7-story high, tall, fortified walls. But the hope of it is, God, you've done it in the past.
Yeah.
And I believe that you can do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would say I told Pastor Stephen Furtick this the other day. I would say I listen to that song probably four times a day.
Wow.
For about 4 months.
That's cool.
At the middle to the last part of last year, just wanting to remind myself that there isn't a situation, a circumstance that's too hard for God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's not hype.
Yeah,
that's real. That's based in history and in fact.
I want to dig a little bit deeper into this, though. What would be the song what would be on the playlist, a band or a song that people wouldn't expect from you? I think they would expect you listening to some worship. I want to know, what is Louis Giglio's karaoke song? What's that one song that it comes on, you can't help but sing along?
You know, I have a wide taste of music and it's kind of all over the map right now. I'm listening to a soundtrack right now from a movie.
It's not Disney.
I was like, is it Disney or Greatest Showman?
I liked Greatest Showman, and I know everybody's kind of dancing around the house to the music right now, but I don't have that on my phone. But I think my music's all over the map. But my go-to song, I've said this before, would be going all the way back to 1970s to James Taylor, Fire and Rain. That would probably be the song.
How does that one go?
I don't know. I wasn't born yet.
How does that one go?
Yeah, it's... this is that moment, right? It's like, I've seen fire and I've seen rain.
Oh.
I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end.
Dude, you've got a great voice. You've led worship, right?
Maybe.
That is awesome. Hey, we also know that you've got we got him to sing.
I'm
Louis Giglio
so
to
happy
sing.
Right now.
That's not the song you want to karaoke to, though. I'll tell you that, because I've tried that before.
Unless it's the end of the night.
It's tough, yeah. And everyone else is not really in their best form.
Indescribable. I want to talk about that for a little bit as well. How excited are you about this book coming out?
Man, it's absolutely blowing up my heart right now because I've been carrying, you know, the Indescribable message for about a decade or so now.
Dude, I literally heard you speak that message at Hillsong Conference in Australia 10 years ago. Probably a little bit more, like 11 years ago.
That's cool.
One of the greatest moments of my life, top 10 moment of my life, period.
Yeah.
Not just speaking life. Was that night.
Yeah.
Some of it's the backstory, which we don't have time to get into, but why I gave that talk that night that you were there and not the year before at the creative track that I went all the way to Australia to give that talk and that session.
Yeah.
And it got derailed by a woman, a nice woman, whose 5-minute testimony was 27 minutes long. And I didn't get to give the talk that I flew all the way to Australia to give. They rented a giant screen. We had all the images set up. I had a team of 3 people with me. Mm. Didn't happen.
Well, I'm glad it got held off because I wasn't there the year before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the way that it got into the main session, I'd never spoken in a main session. Brian Houston didn't know who I was. God set that up. And another crazy story. And then that night, you remember we had the... "What about Jesus?" Do you remember that
guy? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And twice. Yeah. Had him one over here, one over here. And then I'm just sitting in my mind going, there's about to be a 75-foot wide image of Christ on the cross. Mm. If you'll just hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
And I think at the second time I said, if you just give me 1 minute.
Yeah.
Because I knew, man, there's about the biggest Jesus you've ever seen coming.
Yeah.
Not just a Jesus. I mean, literally the biggest one you've ever seen is on the way. But that talk changed my life. Astronomy speaks to me.
Yeah.
People say our pastor is an astronomy geek, but it's not that. It's the case. God is an astronomy geek.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
He says that with these pictures of the moon. Like, 6 pictures of the moon right behind his head.
We need to take a photo right now of because there's the moon behind you as you're talking about this. What can people expect?
Well, the indescribable book, 100 Devotions for Kids About God and Science. Yeah. We really, for a long, long time, have wanted to take that indescribable idea and put it in the hands of kids because they're already fascinated. Mm-hmm. That we come out of the womb fascinated by the stars.
Yeah.
And so the book is incredible. I'm so proud of it. A big team of people worked on it. And not only is it beautiful, it's illustrated beautifully, targeted sort of 6 to 11 to 12-year-olds. But man, I'm telling you, I've seen college kids reading it. I mean, like, for real.
Yeah,
Parents read it after their kids go to bed. And then younger kids kind of like looking at it because it's illustrated so beautifully. But it's a short devotion about something in the world. Could be a star or it could be a slug.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. But God, the content of helping a child wrap their mind around the fact that God is amazing, but not only that, but God thinks they're amazing. Mm-hmm. There's a great scriptural takeaway. It's just been rich watching it sort of have a rollout the last few months as people are getting it in their hands. And you guys know this, but kids are the ultimate critics.
Yeah. Totally.
You know, they either like it or they don't like it. They don't have any of this. I need to let you know that I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, well, I can say I can't wait to get a copy of it. I've spoken on this podcast a few times that I've got 3 teenage daughters. My youngest is 13. And I know it's not aimed at, she's just outside of that target range, but she's got dyslexia. Mm. And so she struggles to read scripture. But as I've shown, I'm a photographer, and as I've shown her my photos, I've seen her eyes come alive with understand. Like, God speaks to her in a different way. Yeah. So as soon as I heard this book was coming out, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm getting a copy from my kid because this is going to speak her language because I know it's so well illustrated.
Well, I think that's a beautiful and a powerful way God speaks to all of us. Yeah. And I love it that we only have to walk out on any given night
to see it
and look up to feel the wonder and the awe. Stephen Hawking passed away this week, and he was not necessarily a Jesus follower, wasn't a real big proponent of a theistic worldview, but he certainly was a great proponent of the fact that humanity was meant for something more than terrestrial thought.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
And this is God, you know, creating a backdrop so grand that it causes us to know there's more to life than what you can see.
Perfect. Lou, we want to thank you so much for your time today. It's been incredible. I love the passion that you've spoken with, and I have no doubt that this is going to help so many of our listeners. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
I mean, was that incredible or what? That was one of the best interviews I think we've had.
I was just going to say that. It was one of my favorites.
I mean, it was indescribable, really, in so many ways.
Indescribable, uncontainable. You place the stars in the sky and you know them by name.
Make sure you leave us a review on iTunes just for that that alone. Ash, what did you...
Chris Tomlin would be very proud of me right now.
I'm sure he listens. He's a friend of the pod. We should send him a friend of the pod t-shirt.
We should.
Once we get producer Kevin to fix... to get them actually made, we'll send one out to Chris Tomlin. I would totally do that. We should ask Kevin's dad if he knows when the Friends of the Pod t-shirt are becoming available. Kevin's dad, do you know when the Friends of the Pod t-shirt will be available?
Crickets.
No, he doesn't know. We'll get them out to you at some point, though. Hey, Ash, I want to know, what did you get out of the interview?
You know, the whole time that we were interviewing him, I kept thinking about some advice that I was given from some people who have mentored me in youth ministry. And that was, I had asked them, like, what do you wish, looking back, what do you wish you would have known or done? Because they're like you know, 25, 35 years into youth ministry. And they said to me, spend your 20s and 30s really getting to know yourself.
Yeah.
And that stuck with me. And when I was listening to Louis talk, I kept thinking, like, in order to know your giants, you really have to know yourself. And you have to know yourself because you have to know when you're triggered and when the giant is triggered and how you respond. And like looking for those warning signs in order to shift your view from the giant to God.
Yeah, that's really good. I love that shifting the view thing that he talked about. You know, he specifically said, take your gaze off your giant and onto your shepherd. And just the way that he talked about, well, his own anxiety, for example, and how sometimes anxiety and addiction and our giants, we put them up on the throne and it's time for us to stop giving them control. I thought it was like a counseling session for us, wasn't it?
I'm telling you, I felt like it was like, it was like all counseling sessions I've ever experienced, like compacted into this interview.
Yeah. I mean, and here's a great thing. After we finished the interview, Louis actually said that he wanted to give our podcast listeners access to a very special resource, especially if you are facing anxiety. If you go to louisgiglio.com, you'll see a little pop-up window that gives you access to a free 7-day devotion that will help you put an X through anxiety. And he's made that available to us. We're super appreciative of the fact that he would do that. He is such a great friend of the pod that he wanted to help all of you guys out. So if you go to louisgiglio.com and just you'll see the pop-up window there for the free 7-day put an X through anxiety devotion. So please take advantage of that. And he also gave us a couple of books to give away.
Yeah, a study guide and DVD.
Yeah, for the Goliath Must Fall book. So if you want to win that, here's what we want you to do. We want you to go and give this podcast a review on iTunes or wherever it is that you're listening. And I want you to give it a 4.5-star review. Anybody who gives it a 4.5-star review and then leaves a comment review will go into the running to win one of 2 books and 1 DVD. So we've got 3 things to give away: 2 study guides to Goliath Must Fall and 1 DVD study guide for Goliath Must Fall. So we want to see those 4.5 stars right now.
Yeah. Why 4.5, not 5?
You know what? I don't know why I said 4.5, but I think it just makes it stand out a little bit more. You know, people want to go.
We're looking for people's approval right now.
Yeah. See, like I said, I'm an Enneagram 3. I'm a networker. I'm a yellow. And so I'm trying to break free from my addiction of wanting people's approval. So I'm going with 4.5 stars. That's why I want 4.5. Listen, I don't require 5 stars in order to feel like I achieved something today.
You can say that out loud, but I know how a 3 thinks.
Yes. Secretly, I want 5, but...
takes one to know one.
Hey, I'm trying to make my Goliath fall. So look, we would love to just see your reviews. We read all of the comments. So make sure you do that. And as you do that, you'll go in the running to win one of these very special prizes. Ash, what else do we want people to do when it comes to the podcast?
Subscribe wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. Share it with your friends. I'm sure you know somebody who needs to hear what Louis just shared.
Yes, that's what we always want them to do. And we also want you to check out our show notes as well. We've got all the links to the louisgiglio.com. So if you don't want to type that out on your phone right now, you can just click on the link in the show notes. So check that out as well. And, you know, as always, when you think next generation,
think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.